Today's show, Georgia Tech lays it on Florida State. Michigan gets its notice of allegation. Coach Prime gets sensitive. Big 12 UConn and Parrotgate in New York.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
And it was always going to end with me under NCAA investigation, wasn't it?
Russ Gellinger.
Mayor, what is wrong with you today?
And SI's Pat Forty.
Take that, take that.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the show. Week one, everyone's fired up. Start of the season. Everyone but Florida State, which is currently in 17th place in the ACC.
Dan, you must be so fired up that you said, welcome to the show. And it's not
show,
welcome to the
not
pod.
Even the pod. I know.
Oh, wow. Should I redo it? I'm sorry.
No. I think it's now recorded for history.
Yeah, I was looking up how many teams were in the ACC. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So welcome to the pod. I'm not in 17th place. I may be third place on this podcast, actually fourth after Joe, but
yeah, hell of a start for FSU.
Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets 24, Seminoles 21. We'll do a quick week zero recap. Should there be panic in Tallahassee, Pat, or should they just Georgia Tech look pretty good? I don't know what to say. Yeah. Maybe you don't think they're good, but they look good.
No reason to panic in Tallahassee, but plenty of reason to be unhappy and at least concerned. You know, I wrote a quick column after the game, and the playoff really does give you a little bit more breathing room. You don't have to go head to the ledges immediately if you lose in the first week. You got to get to the ACC championship game, and it's a league loss, so that's not good. But if you get to the ACC championship game and you win the ACC championship game, you're absolutely in the playoff. Doesn't matter what Kirk Herbstreit says or Nick Saban says or anyone else, you're going to the playoff. And even if you get there with one loss, you're going to have a chance maybe to get in the playoff. So there's no reason to panic, but man, that was a really unimpressive performance by Florida State. It was a very good performance by Georgia Tech. I thought they were great, and Brent Key's come along. And I think we all said on the podcast last week, we expected it to be close. We didn't think that this was a Georgia Tech team that couldn't match up necessarily, and they were really good on the lines. Haynes King made plays. Jamal Haynes at running back. That looks to me like a good team. I'll be very, very surprised if they don't have a very good season. But Florida State was supposed to be really good on the lines, and they got punched. They got knocked around pretty badly physically. And DJ Uiagalelei looks like the same quarterback he's been, which is a pretty good quarterback. But if you want to try to win a national championship, I'm not sure he's your guy.
Yeah, pretty good. Doesn't cut it with a national championship in many ways, this kind of this latest era of college football. Yeah, kudos to Georgia Tech. And I know we talked about them on the pod last week, as Pat said, and I think we all thought it would be close and that they would cover that spread, which seemed like a lot, 10.5, 11, something like that. And then they just had a great game plan from Brent Key and staff of slowing down the game, right, and shortening it. And boy, they did that. I think there were it's a great stat tweeted out yesterday that there were 14 possessions in the Georgia Tech Florida State game, 7 for each team. That was fewer possessions than any FBS game played since 2020. So Georgia Tech's game plan worked out really well, and they ran the ball really well. And like Pat said, what was so shocking is this Florida State defensive line that's been incredibly lauded in their front seven in general was just pushed for 5 yards a carry down the field. So really impressive. And does this, I mean, a lot of people's pick, FSU is a lot of people's pick, obviously, to repeat as the ACC champion, including Nick Saban's. And so this kind of maybe changes a little bit the ACC title race a bit.
Well, this looked like a team coached by a former offensive line coach, right?
Yeah.
I loved what I love too is they have it seems like they have a personality, and I think Key was leaning into that after, like, we're going to be forceful, right? Go ahead.
Katie George in the post game asked him, you know, about that, their line play or whatever, and he said, "Are you kidding me? Run the ball.
The ball. Run the dang ball." I think he's got like 15 former offensive linemen on staff too, in some roles, like support staff, whatever. It's just, it is a offensive lineman run program.
And it works. Reminded me, let's not get carried away yet. That is overreaction, but you know, it reminded me of the way Stanford just would celebrate the brute force. You remember when they were like the nerd, they would come out with these horn-rimmed glasses stuff. Remember that?
Like intellectual bit. Brutality.
That was it. Intellectual was brutality, right? We're all smart, but we're also 6'7", 313. Georgia Tech, like, that's a lane for that program.
It is.
You know, like, you gotta have a personality that fits your school. And that might work. And, you know, and obviously tremendous academics, and maybe you get these linemen, and then running backs are going to follow the linemen. And yeah, you're not going to be able to do it this, or we're going to do it this way. Like Ross said, slow the game down, intellectual brutality. We're going to be hard to play against. We're going to block, and we're going to win the game. And I thought that was a real coming out. They really, let me put it this way, they utilized having the whole spotlight on the program about as well as you could. Right? That's everybody true. Walked away saying, okay, this is what Georgia Tech football is, and it's successful. Haynes King, perfect for it. And, you know, he's still got, I think he's got another year after this. Obviously had a big year last year. I don't know what, if he, you know, stays or goes. He never really build for too long and college football, but he came in from Texas A&M and found his spot. And so I think, like, if Brent Key is out there, this is what we're marketing, and they have been, this is what we're building to. This was a heck of an opportunity to sit out there and tell the country who you were in a big time game. We'll see how many games they win this year, but Georgia Tech's not going to get pushed around.
Well, they've done this before too, right? This isn't Paul Johnson was there. They had that same option. Kind of mentality when he ran the option. I mean, they ran the ball 90-95% of the time and pushed around a lot of teams up and down the field and won a lot of games. So it's worked for them in the past.
Yeah, they definitely, at least they had a calling card, and it was a running calling card. But this is a little different, I think, you know, where then I just think it was very hard to recruit quarterbacks to that system because you just weren't going to throw. And their lineman, too, is cut block, cut block, cut block. And this seems to be more just, we're just going to line up and mash you, which might be more appealing.
Great scene in Ireland. Nice crowd for game day. Great crowd, all that. Really like it. We've talked about them moving week one to week zero. More, you know, have more games on. They need to find another week in the season to try to, because we're playing, the championship game is January 20th. Like, everyone's fired up for college football right now. You're going to be fired up in 4 months. 5 months, sorry. Pat, Ross, what's the latest on week zero becoming week one? Is that still going on, or is it less momentum?
You know, take you back to 2022. That's when it really got started, when they were trying to decide how to fit, you know, two more rounds, eight more games of the playoff into this small, tight window between the conference championship games and really mid-January. They had like this six-week stretch. So when they were trying in 2022 to fit all this in, they started to discuss the prospect of moving up the season 1 week. You know, we had a story last week, just kind of an update on it, because, and you know, to boil it down, there's really no update on it. They've stopped talking about it because they set the dates already for the next 2 years. But most people who were talking about it, the conference commissioners, CFP leaders, still want it to happen eventually, and still believe that it will eventually happen, that the regular season will move up in order to give you an extra week in December to play the first round So it's not up against the NFL for number one. And number two, so you don't go to the third week of January and you finish in the second week, you know, finish earlier in January, again, avoiding the NFL, avoiding encroaching too much and competing with the NFL. So most believe that it's eventually going to happen. And it's, you know, a higher probability for it to happen if the ratings for that first round are what many believe that it will be, which are not great because it's competing with the NFL on that Saturday. Third Saturday in December, Dan, we'll have kickoff at noon of probably will be the G5 playoff game, the five against 12 seed will almost certainly be that daytime noon game. And at 1 o'clock, an hour later, I think it's Chiefs and Texans will kick off. And then at 3 o'clock or 3:30, whatever, you'll have another college football playoff game. And then a half an hour later, you'll have Ravens Steelers kickoff. So you have those two games will be competing against the NFL. And, you know, those ratings will be interesting to see. Now, the night game, Saturday night and Friday night game of college, the college football playoff first round will be unopposed. And those ratings will be bonanzas, I'm sure. Saturday night's CFP game will certainly be the best. They'll probably pick the best, you know, matchup for that slot, which, you know, that'll be bonanzas. But so two that will be opposed to the NFL, that'll be interesting to watch and a reason why they want to shift up the season. But shifting up the season is not easy, right? The championship games have to shift up.
What was that?
The rivalry weekend have to shift up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoops. I texted somebody shift the other day, and I texted them shit. Oh. So that was great. That worked out good. So we'll see.
You have to shift. Was it mom?
No, it wasn't mom. No. Okay. No, it was a college football person about this. I was literally talking shift about this, shifting up the regular season. I put up the regular season. Right. You have to move up the rivalry weekend. And the TV, I don't think, Dan, we talked about this before, doesn't like moving the rivalry weekend. And I don't like it either. Moving the rivalry weekend off of Thanksgiving and championship game on Thanksgiving, because it only gives you 9 games on a Thanksgiving holiday week instead of 50.
Right. Yeah.
Go
ahead.
I'm sorry. Nothing pertaining to that. I'm a little concerned about our overly positive open of this podcast. I think we need to stab Florida State a little bit more.
Oh, all right.
We got to be true to our identity.
Okay, man, I don't know. I'm so excited for the season. I'm rattled. I'm not doing that. I'm already.
We lauded Georgia Tech deservedly, but we also need to ride in and bayonet the wounded.
They better beat Boston College next Monday. Yeah, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, they better. Yeah. They better.
Yeah.
I mean, all I heard was that they were too good for the ACC.
Yeah.
The program had outgrown the ACC. What happened?
I'm sure there are ACC place. Folks, many ACC folks, Pat, at other ACC schools and probably in ACC headquarters. I think Jim Phillips was there at the game in Ireland. I'm sure they have smiles, some of them probably privately, but they have smiles at the result of that one.
I would think so.
I guess that Jim Phillips doesn't, you know, he's not going to drink a whole lot. Doesn't seem like a big drinker to me, but
I don't think so.
Maybe a few pints got downed in celebration. Yeah. Strange times. I agree. That was not a great performance by Florida State. And this is my thing. We talked about this last week. I'm like, where are they coming up with these spreads?
Yeah.
Well,
that one was crazy.
I'm telling you what.
In an opening, it's 13,
too many new players. Maybe this is what they are.
This is when you get Vegas, I think, the beginning of the season, when they're still trying to figure it out. I mean, I didn't watch Hawaii and Delaware State. No apologies to Delaware State for not staying up for them. But the other three games, the underdogs covered for every single minute, and none of them were ever even close.
Yeah.
Like, New Mexico was a 14-point home dog against an FCS team and should have won. They blew a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter. And then Nevada, oh my God, I have to say, I did pick SMU to win the ACC.
Oh, yeah.
How are you feeling about that one?
Not real good.
It was a good week one. I mean, week zero. It was a competitive week.
Oh, it was very
zero,
fun. The three games were all great.
Yeah.
But If you look at the 40-yard dash, which came out this week, today, as a matter of fact, Virginia Tech is now my pick to win the ACC.
You did a little switcheroo there after the game one.
Flip-flopper.
That's a game. That sounds like a week one overreaction there, Pat.
It might be, but I watched that game. I was like, oh, my God, what is wrong with SMU? What have you been doing?
It was a bold pick. It was a bold pick.
I know.
It was bold, yeah.
You can call it bold or you can call it dumb, which it probably was.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. He spent too much time. All of a sudden, everyone talked themselves into DJU being like,
yeah.
And it's like, well, kind of looked like the guy that Clemson got rid of.
He did. He ended up being, the line wasn't terrible, 19 to 27, but
downfield,
threw for less than 100. Yeah. I can
nothing
struggled
downfield.
On downfield passes, threw for less than 200 yards, seven yards an attempt, what he finished with, and of course, no touchdowns. The downfield passing was a real struggle, and they struggled to run the ball as well.
Yeah, after the first possession, good adjustments, I think, by Georgia Tech. But enough of that positivity. They're missing some receivers. Hakeem Williams didn't play, but they lost some good receivers. But the game plan was very conservative too. They didn't look like they called many downfield shots unless DJ was just checking.
They may know something.
They might. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, with this many transfers and this much rot, I don't know how they come up. I understand Vegas is smarter than me, which is why I don't gamble against them. And I know how bizarro it is when they sit there and they'll be like, especially when they, like, I think Ohio State's a 50-point favorite over Akron this week.
That seems justifiable.
But it'll come in at like, it'll come in at 53-3.
Yeah.
Right. And you're like, how? How did you get that? But I don't know how the heck. It's just too much. Who would be able to determine that well how personnel? You'd think you'd have a better job than picking lines.
Yeah.
If you're that good at figuring out all these players. So I think you're right. Yeah. Buy Apple stock, but. or something else, AI, but that line didn't make any sense, and it certainly didn't make any sense in retrospect. All right, over the weekend, Michigan finally got its notice of allegations in the LaFair Connor Stallions, the advanced scouting case, not sign stealing. You're allowed to sign steal. Nothing better than Ross and I put that out there on Twitter on Sunday, and nothing better than watching the arguments unfold.
Oh my god.
But sir, you're allowed to steal the signs. You just not, it's like, okay. Mute me,
just
please.
Brutal.
And then it's like Buckeye fan 63 and Spartan fan 84 are in full agreement. No, you're dirty, rotten cheat. Like they just no, but and then it's like Michigan lawyer going, but the wording of the statute is very confusing. Please stop.
One of the most precious parts of this has been the Michigan law grads
there's a lot
jumping
of,
into to explain the NCAA rule book to everybody, whether they just read it 10
the
minutes
way they
ago,
interpret
they,
it.
They know
they
it.
Interpret
yes.
it yeah, yeah. I mean they have a point. The statute is terribly written. It doesn't really say anything. And you could probably, and quite possibly, Michigan will fight down to the letter of, you know, the definition of advanced or something.
Or like Clemson's doing, the definition of is.
Right. What's the definition? Okay. Yes, it is. Absolutely. This statute just basically says you can't advance scout. Doesn't say you can't send somebody who isn't on your staff. It doesn't say this. Doesn't say that. It's all weak sauce. It still happened. Like, okay. Like, fine. But maybe you can win on some technicality, but not really. That isn't what we're really talking about here. But needless to say, the discourse on social media is always dignified.
Yes,
so they
nuanced,
got a point, but not
rational.
Really. But anyway, the NOA has come in, believed to be pretty similar, certainly in for all intents and purposes of the draft. It's not like the new NOA is like, oh, sorry, you didn't do it. But now Michigan has, Pat, you could help me, 90 days to respond, and then the NCAA 60 days to respond to that, and then they could set a hearing 2 months after that. And then, so if you're expecting padlocks on the Michigan Stadium doors to be thrown down at any moment. Not going to happen this year. So this is where we're at.
Yeah, we're looking like spring 2025, maybe, or something like that, for this thing to be resolved.
Yeah, maybe at least. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's best case. Yeah. That's without people asking for extensions and delays and this and that. And we got to make sure that, you know, the Ritz-Carlton Key Biscayne is available for the hearing and that sort of thing. But yeah, it'll be a while unless, you know, for some reason this NOA presents some kind of evidence, and we don't think it does, that Michigan's like, oh gosh, let's just settle this thing. That doesn't seem to be the case, and I don't think they want to settle it so fast that Sharon Moore gets suspended during this season. So
yeah, it's really going to depend on what the proposed negotiation goes to, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so my guess is we're heading to, you know, they've never let the media into a hearing. This would be a really good one to be in.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
North Carolina academic hearing would have been great. Ole Miss, this one. Oh yeah. But that's not going to happen either. So it's going to be a fantastic dragged out thing that could materially affect Michigan's 2025 season, but probably nothing in 2024.
So the Netflix sign stealer doc comes out Tuesday. Now, this is all coincidental timing, of course, because we know no one would ever drop NOAs or leak information or anything like that to help with a narrative. This is college football. That would never happen. However, the NOA is, as we speak, like, can they get it out to try? Could this suddenly get leaked again? To help set the narrative before young Connor Stallions gets to take to the Netflix, tell his side. Right. It's a PR battle more than anything else.
It's a great question. These are all things that aren't supposed to be leaked, but by golly, this has been one of the all time leaker stories. That's for sure. In all directions, but you know, I think. They Michigan could release the NOA if they wanted, right? Like, I mean, if there's anything that needs to be redacted or whatever, there's been schools that have done that, but I don't think they're predisposed to in this case, but we'll see.
Could be fun. You know, some of us have maybe filed the Freedom of Information Act, so it's the law. Michigan case, leaks, leaks, leaks. We know the NCAA wouldn't do it, though, because they investigated me for getting leaks. You know, they wouldn't. The NCAA would never be involved in that kind of behavior.
I sense sarcasm.
And it was always going to end with me under NCAA investigation, wasn't it, really? No,
Dan Wetzel under NCAA investigation. The pod under NCAA investigation.
Under it. We were. I think that case has been closed.
When are we getting our notes?
It was more the hamburger. It was what is the definition of a cheeseburger? There's the cheeseburger case.
I wonder if we should.
How the hell do you get investigated by the NCAA when you don't even belong to the NCAA?
It's a volunteer membership organization, Dan.
I want to see the Wetzel file.
There's a dossier up there on me. Yes. Like, I am enough Bush Light. How do you say
dossier? There's Christian Dawkins.
A dossier?
Dossier. There's a dossier. They're like, he'll crack under enough Bush Lights. It's like, right?
Am I,
it's the FBI probe. And I might, if you buy me, I'm ruling anything out. Let's give it a try.
You can be bought. We all can to a certain degree. Yeah.
I can.
I mean,
leaks.
If I were John Duncan at the NCAA, I'd probably say, all right, who's our best drinker? We're sending them in to interview Wetzel at the Slippery Noodle.
Over to say they haven't, they've got drinker or leaker? NCAA's best leaker? Oh, drinker. I'm sorry. They don't have leakers there, right? Ever. They have a mirror store. Do they sell mirrors in Indianapolis? Like full-length mirror. Like, could you go
mirror
there?
A mirror?
Mirror.
Mirror? Yeah. What is wrong with you today?
That's how you say it.
Mirror?
Mirror.
Look in the reflection.
Dossier, mirror. Damn, Dan. What did you do this weekend?
Let me tell you who is in zero. Trouble. Let me tell you who's in trouble. Kirk Ferentz, that outlaw.
Yeah, yeah. Noted.
What happened to your guy? What happened? Bad boys, bad boys. Iowa? What the hell, Iowa? Next thing you're going to tell me, he's up at that lake getting trashed during the preseason camp. Kirk Ferentz, dad, what did you do? Come on. You can't trust anybody anymore.
No, this one, it truly, it's
Iowa,
like...
recruiting violations? Come on.
This what is happened, like, yeah, the dude in Breaking Bad, like, you know, the chemistry teacher in high school, you would not expect to become a meth kingpin. That's
Grandpa.
Kirk Ferentz out there tampering with Cade McNamara. How about that?
The lamest story ever.
There's so many people tampering in it's of all people. Kirk Ferentz gets suspended a game for tampering.
Well, it figures he wouldn't be good at it because he's not.
Yeah, I know. He doesn't know how to get cheat. That's right. Yeah.
He probably sent a snail mail. Warmest regards, Coach Ferentz. Cade, I'd love to have you continue your academic progress here.
Please get in the portal. We will scoop you up.
I mean, we've had great scandals, right? I mean, there's Nevin Shapira, right? There's the FBI, Chris, like you said, Christian Dawkins. It was like Curtis Malone, who has had a heroin ring while funding an AAU program out of D.C. Like, there's been some big time stuff. And then there's Kirk Ferentz and Cade McNamara, the most G-rated. That doc isn't going on Netflix. It's going to go on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
That they one time with a in his warm 25 but firm handshake.
He's dinged for the first game, though. He's sitting out against Illinois State.
I know. I know. He apologized, too. You see his apology?
Nice.
Yeah, we could compare and contrast his him and Harbaugh.
That's right. Yeah.
I do not lie. I do not cheat. I do not steal.
Except for when I lie about lying.
You see, the Chargers got stuck in a hotel elevator.
What?
They're playing preseason game down in, I think, Dallas. So they got stuck. 15 guys got in an elevator. Oh. And of course, they had to get the Dallas Fire and Rescue to get them out. And Harbaugh said he wished he was in the elevator with his men.
Of course. Yeah. Of course he did.
Right. Yeah, he extemporized for quite a while on what a bonding experience it was for them.
It's good for the team. don't put 15 NFL players in one elevator.
That would be an
I'm
unpleasant.
Sure you'll hit the weight limit. Is that what happened?
Yeah. I don't know if there's weight limit or not, but.
Oh, they said they had to rescue 15 guys. I don't want to be like 50. I wouldn't want to be with the U.S. like figure skating team. 15 people right. in an elevator. Kirk Ferentz is out for a game. So he's out. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
The latest. All right, we'll be back after this. Thursday night, big game. Coach Prime will be playing the Colorado hosting North Dakota State. That is the big game on ESPN. North Dakota State, Colorado is a 9.5-point favorite in that game. We will not be getting a question, apparently, after from Denver columnist Sean Keeler. We've discussed this in the past. I think Sean Keeler is awesome sports columnist, holds the Denver team's feet to the fire, and Colorado football became a thing, and Coach Prime doesn't like him, disrespectful. I don't know what's going on. This is not new. Coach Prime, he suspended a really good beat writer at the Clarion Ledger, not suspended, but he tried to get him fired back when he covered when he was at Jackson State. Prime Snowflake, Pat, what do we got?
Yes, Coach Prime. That's why we knew the season was here when Kirk Ferentz is the outlaw and Deion Sanders is a snowflake who's refusing to take questions from a big, mean media guy. I thought that was amazing, and especially like Colorado is so carrying his water as they have for every minute that he has been the coach there. That the examples that they cited of the personal attacks on him was like, oh my God. I'm glad they never read my columns that I wrote. I mean, that's like like Bobby Petrino, the stuff I wrote about him, how mean that was. And Bobby Petrino then would turn around and sit down with me one-on-one. Took a couple of years, but, you know, like, I just went like, what kind of absolute namby-pamby world are we living in here? And that Deion Sanders is living in, Colorado is living in. We can't take the criticism. We can't do it. It's you're getting paid a lot of money, and you're Deion Sanders. You've been an NFL athlete. You've been a Major League Baseball athlete, and all of a sudden you can't handle a little bit of criticism? What on earth is going on? I think this is part and parcel of the fact that most people – in the vast majority of people in the media world, sports media world now, will gladly trade access in exchange for not writing anything critical or saying anything critical or asking hard questions. And so Sean Keeler stands out maybe more now than in a climate where he used to. And yes, all right, there's an element of big city edge that comes. He's a Denver columnist. As Dan said, he covers a lot of pro sports. And like you could say, Bill Plaschke in L.A. covers a lot of pro sports. And then when he needs to rip Lincoln Riley, he will. And it won't be very nice. But that's part of the deal. And I am very surprised that Coach Prime and Colorado are reacting in this fashion.
Well, it also goes against everything that coaches in general talk about, which is, you know, ignoring the media, not letting the outside noise get in and impact decisions and impact your thinking and put the blinders on. You know, all those cliches and things you hear from coaches and from Deion, too, in the past, I think. And it goes against all that. It's odd behavior. And I understand that they were... some of the like headlines on Sean Keeler's columns, you know, they looked at as maybe more personal, attacking the man Deion and not necessarily the coach and all that stuff. But I mean, gosh, just like ignore it and move on. Don't let it get to you. Certainly don't do this. Cause we saw, I think we talked about it on the pod right after it kind of came out. And then, man, the last few days, everybody picked it up. Like all of these national outlets have run stories with headlines on it. So now you got those headlines to deal with. And you just made a bigger controversy of all of it in a bigger distraction for your team, who this day in 2024, right, is on social media and sees all this stuff.
This is what he does. I went back. I should have been more prepared, but I remember this. Rashad Milligan was the reporter. He was an excellent reporter for the Clarion Ledger in Jackson, Mississippi. And I when Deion Sanders went to Jackson State, I bought a subscription to the Clarion Ledger because I just knew he'd be making tons of news. And one of their star recruits at the time was charged with domestic violence. And Rashad Milligan reported on the charge in Texas, and they banned him from talking to anyone at the SWAC media days because Deion was upset and Jackson State was upset. And it was like, I think we're pointing the finger at the wrong, like, what is he not supposed to report the news? The guy who's getting charged. I mean, like,
just reporting facts.
Yeah. A domestic violence charge has been, he was expected to plead guilty on a charge of assault causes, you know, and then there was like, then he wasn't going to plan. And I don't know. It was just like, this is what he does. I think we've said this, I think Deion Sanders is the right coach for certain people. I think he's probably extremely difficult and a bully to other people. Certainly the way he runs guy, he's a fascinating guy. He's doing it his way. This is dumb, but again, yeah, it brings up, it doesn't lend itself to the idea of like, listen, sometimes things aren't fair. Sometimes, I mean, Deion's won in life, man. Like, he is won. Like, what does he care about this? Like a couple lines in the Denver paper. I just think it's one more block of pressure on him to have a huge season. And we don't know what Colorado, we'll be very interested to see what Colorado does. They have an excellent quarterback. They've got some high-end talent. He's trying to build this team in a different way. I am willing to see if it will work. As a contrarian, I'm hoping that it works. But if they don't have a big season, if he thinks whatever got written into Denver, I mean, they're going to eviscerate him all over the country because he's a big name and they've put themselves out there. And they need to win. They need to have a big season. And it gets bigger and bigger when you're acting this way that just doesn't seem like it's going to help. I don't know what it accomplishes.
No, I don't either. And I, you know, you're right. There are a lot of people out there waiting for this to not work so they can sack dance on the whole Deion as a power coach, power league coach guy. And I would like to see it succeed because I think it's been fascinating and he is so different than anyone else. But this doesn't help you in any way, as far as I can figure. One of the things Deion has done at Colorado and at Jackson State was to basically kind of have his own media, right? They've got the, you know, the production crew that follows him around all the time and they put stuff on YouTube and wherever. And so they've to a degree tried to circumvent the media and they still get, I mean, there is a plenty of people in the fawning press corps in Colorado willing to roll with however Deion wants to do things. But if you're going to circumvent a large segment of the media are also going to have people that don't like that a whole lot. And they're still going to cover the team and they may be less predisposed to give you the benefit of the doubt. And if you go 4-8 after starting 3-0, that's going to be a problem. And then if you start badly this season with three really interesting games to begin, look out.
We'll be right back with more Big 12 expansion never sleeps news. All right, you know, season's ready to start here, and of course we get expansion.
Of course.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
Yeah.
You know, if you'd just done this in May, we could have talked about it for a lot. But.
Yeah.
Big 12, Ross reporting, wants UConn in all sports now or as soon as possible, mainly basketball. And football in, what, 2031? Build up that Husky program?
Yeah. There's going to be like a runway. The proposal is a runway for football. You know, let's go back here. This is not anything real new, right? I think maybe last fall or last winter, we discussed on the pod, there were some rumblings that the Big 12 and UConn were at least kind of talking. The officials were talking. They've been negotiating for months. I think it's gotten to a point where the negotiations have reached a point where both sides, and when I say sides, I'm talking about, you know, Big 12 conference administration and UConn school administration have kind of reached in the TV networks involved in the Big 12 TV deal, have reached kind of an agreement on the expansion. The negotiations of months long negotiations have reached a point where now it's time for the presentations of this negotiated proposal to the athletic directors and the presidents of the Big 12, who are needed, obviously, to vote for this to happen. And the AD's got a presentation about a week and a half ago from Dave Benedict, the athletic director at UConn, came into Dallas and gave a presentation. And a similar presentation will be done this week in front of Big 12 presidents as well. And then we'll see if there is enough interest from the membership in doing it. And part of the proposal, as Dan mentioned, is that football gets a runway, about a 6-year or so runway, to invest more and improve before actually entering as a full member on year one of the Big 12's new TV deal, whenever that's supposed to start after, obviously, the old TV deal, I think 2031, because this one lasts 6-7 years. So that is the thought. But in all the other sports, they will join likely in 2026, if the proposal, that's according to the proposal, and they'll get a distribution share, not a full share, Big 12 gets in the 30 millions as far as their share, their TV rights, kind of conference distribution share. It'll probably be a third of that to UConn. It's not part of the proposal. It's not diluting the other members' shares. I don't know the particulars around that, but the thought is that the proposal, how it's been presented, will not dilute their shares. So it won't cost them any additional money. It will cost them, obviously, to travel to UConn, which has been a hangup. That's been a hangup among administrators and why it's not considered an automatic in this happening.
Yeah, this is interesting to me. I think SMU kind of ruined the landscape for anybody trying to get in and get like good money right away. And SMU's like, now we'll just kind of forego 9 years of media rights to get into the Big 12 or get into the ACC. Sorry, so UConn has to come in at a major reduced rate, and obviously they're going to try to put off football for quite a while. To me, I understand why the Big 12 wants it, and I know Yormark has wanted this for quite a while and has been pushing for it, and has probably been continually trying to turn a few of the less enthusiastic schools toward this. But if I'm UConn, I am unchanged in my opinion that this is once again putting the wrong sport first and going away from your identity. You're a basketball school in the Northeast that's in the – your basketball school has never had it as good as you've got it right now. Your coach just turned down the Los Angeles Lakers to stay at UConn, where he has won consecutive national championships. Gino Auriemma is still sending the women's team to the Final Four. You dominate Madison Square Garden at the Big East tournament. You electrify that Northeast corner when your program comes into those places. And now you want to take that and send them to Lubbock and Tempe and Salt Lake City and Waco. Waco, they might be excited because they got good basketball there. But come on. You are absolutely throwing away your identity for football. And I don't understand it.
I hate it. Hate it. I couldn't be more in agreement, Pat. It's just, you be good at the sport you can be good at. They're great at it. They're great at it. Six national titles since 2000, right? Calhoun had what, three?
Yes,
Ollie
one.
Yeah, Hurley two and going. It works when you're in the Big East. It didn't work when you're in the American. You've tried this. UConn as an institution, what is the point of these sports? It's to market your school, right? It gets more and more competitive all the time. It has a great identity. It offers something that the other schools in the Northeast don't really, which is you can come to our public school, our state school, and have an incredible big-time college sports environment. Nobody else really has that. You get it at times here or there. Providence can be okay. You know, maybe like a hockey team here, but like Boston College, yeah, you play Clemson will show up and they'll fill the state. But like you come to UConn, you can be having those Final Four runs. No one else is doing that as a state school. It's attractive to the school. It gives the students something, gives pride in the state. Don't mess with what is working to chase what in football. How good are you going to get?
That's the thing. I'm telling you what, they went 8-5 in 2010, won the Big East in a three-way tie and went to the Fiesta Bowl. And they act like, oh, well, we were big time. We got to get back to being big time. They were not big time. Never big time.
Right. Until they go back to an old Big East football, yeah, that's fine. If that reforms, this is not a good idea at all. And they'll tell you, well, if we don't do it, we're not going to have the money to win in basketball. You're not supposed to be able to do it now. And guess what? You're killing everybody. Dude, last year wasn't even close. They're so good. This is the biggest example of football, because the disparity between the greatness of the basketball and the not greatness of the football is greater than anything. They have a better basketball program than Duke, and Duke's got a better football program. Like, it's just go with what you're good at and be a basketball school. Okay, you're not going to have, but your stadium is in East Hartford. You're never going to be Michigan and Ohio State and Texas and Florida. It just doesn't work. But you can be that basketball and have at it, man. Have Villanova come in. The campus is alive. Have the final four runs. I hate this. Hate it.
Well, I think, you know, people are going to certainly ask, like you guys rightfully are, why would you do this if you're UConn? And I think many of their fans are asking that after the news emerged, is why are we doing this? You know, everybody is chasing not necessarily football success, but football money. Yeah, so football money. And
you can't root for money. You can root for national championships.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what everybody's chasing. It's you know, to remind our listeners of the college football playoff distribution model, independents get one sixth of a cut of a group of five program in distribution annually, except for Notre Dame. And just to remind you, UConn's the only independent left. So that is obviously a big change. That would be a big change financially. And then it would be a big change financially when their football is full, when they're full members and get a full distribution in 2031. It would be, you know, three, four times what they're making. But it's about the money, and it's about getting to that upper level, that A4 level, before other things happen, right? Where you have a fractured state of college athletics.
How much money do you make, Dan, with selling all your tickets in college basketball games and all the t-shirts?
Yeah, I mean, I understand.
And the surge of enrollment numbers.
Yeah, like, I more understand the money argument today, since in 1 year, right, UConn will have to, or is able to distribute direct revenue, schools are, to athletes. So I understand it more today than yesterday, but it still is something that is hard for people to accept, for sure.
I dropped football before I did this.
I was going to say, you know what? I'd say we're going to play FCS football, and we're just not going to worry about that. And we're still going to kick everybody's ass in basketball, because I can't say this with absolute fact, but I know when all this stuff came up last year, year before, whatever, about UConn or the Big 12, Danny Hurley wasn't sitting there saying, oh yeah, let's do that. Hell no. Now, if you want to go ahead and lose him to the NBA or elsewhere, this seems like a good way to do it, by saying, yep, hey, Dan, get ready for that trip to Lubbock. Get ready for that trip to Tempe. Get ready for the trip to Salt Lake.
Not being able to recruit in the Northeast. And it's just, you have an identity. I don't know. We're repeating ourselves now, but no one's going to listen to us. The biggest con they ever got was getting fans to root for money.
Yep.
And it's like, great. I bring this excuse up, but Boston College used to have an excellent athletic department that was exciting. They'd make Sweet 16s. They'd make bowl games. They'd do this. They went to the ACC. They haven't done anything in 20 years in any sport other than hockey, which isn't in the ACC.
Well, so we talked about, why would UConn do this? Why would the Big 12 do this?
They're a great basketball team.
Yeah.
And they get your Northeast presence, which isn't even going to be the case.
No, but it checks a couple of boxes that your Mark has wanted to check, who is a New York guy and does like basketball and sees the potential. Like, from his standpoint, I'm sure you're looking at this saying, we are never going to be the Big Ten of the SEC from a football standpoint, but we are right now the deepest basketball conference. And how can we get even better? We add UConn and we start playing our league tournament every once in a while in New York, which sounds great, but then, okay, get the fans there, as opposed to Kansas City or Dallas. That's their avenue. That's their way to distinguish and differentiate themselves and build their own niche. And so if I'm Brett Yormark, this makes sense and this is smart, but again, I think it's only smart in one direction.
Yeah, it's certainly, I agree to grab that you're already maybe, you know, arguably the best basketball conference in the country, and then you'd grab, you know, grab the best basketball program maybe in championships for the last 25 years. You just enhance that brand. And I think Pat nailed it about you're not going to be the Big Ten and SEC in football. So what are you going to be? And I think, yeah, I think that's they want to be, want to enhance that basketball brand. He does as much as he wants and get that footprint. Yeah. In the Northeast. But you also understand why there is, you know, pushback administratively on this move because of, like I mentioned earlier, because of the travel, the geographic location of things, and because of the struggles in UConn football historically. I think that's a big pushback. I think the presentation that UConn officials made to the athletic directors centered around their investment in football and what they plan on doing to invest in football and be competitive in football. Now, the reverse side of that, from some coaches I've heard in the league, is, you know, we're fine with adding them. It's a beatable opponent, right? It's a winnable game for everyone. But I think administratively they don't necessarily view it as that. Which everybody's asking the question of what's their value in the next TV deal. We've known that. I think, you know, I've written this about how the Big 12 wants to bifurcate, you know, kind of separate their football TV contract and their basketball TV contract in the next wave. And I think the idea is this will enhance significantly the value of a separate basketball contract if they do go that route.
Yeah. I mean, from that standpoint, sure. It makes all that sense. And I the times I have asked ADs and other administrators in the Big 12 about UConn, I mean, they spend 95% of their time thinking football. And you bring up UConn, they're like, oh gosh, I don't know, you know, because that, from a football standpoint, what does it give you other than, to your point, Ross, somebody you can beat? But you're adding travel, you're not adding anything that's going to help your playoff resume from a conference standpoint. You know, it's not like, oh, the league's going to get tougher. I mean, you can give UConn 6 years to build up their football program. What is it going to work? What does that mean? Everybody's trying to build up their football program. There's still only so many that can win, and they've got a lot of reasons why it would be hard for them to win.
This is the time of year for some crazy matchups. And we're going to talk a lot of week one, obviously, later in the week. As we preview that. But Thursday, there is one. It's pretty rare there's a college I've never heard of. Cover college sports long enough, and you pretty much heard of them all. But I'll see if these guys know. Can anyone tell me where Lindenwood is located? Lindenwood?
Yes. Yes.
You know what city Lindenwood is in?
Outside of St. Louis. Yeah, I've been
St.
there, brother.
St. Charles, Missouri?
Yes, wow. Thank you.
Look at that.
I've been there. I have covered a University of Missouri spring football scrimmage in Lindenwood.
At Lindenwood, okay.
Right back in your face, Dan.
I was wondering.
Take that.
Lindenwood is playing Kansas.
I was going to say Texas, by the way. I was going to say Texas.
Lindenwood. They are new. Welcome to Division I. They're playing in FCS now. They're playing Kansas. Since Kansas is building its stadium, they're playing this game, Lindenwood versus Kansas, at the NWSL soccer stadium in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Is where the game's getting played. Lindenwood, 43.5-point dogs. They made a playoff appearance in the NAIA in 2010. Then had the gumption to move up to Division II, where they made two playoff appearances and won one game. They hung one on 2019 they won, then lost. They're 1-2 in those playoffs, lost to Grand Valley in 2021. Then decided, hey, keep going. And now they're in FCS. They really aren't any good. They've never really been any good.
No.
But somehow here they are. And now they're playing Kansas, Lindenwood.
It's I guess everybody needs ambition, but I don't quite get that. Maybe they're trying to stamp themselves as St. Louis's college football team, which good luck with that. But yeah, the campus that I went to, and this was 1,000 years ago, like nearly 40 years ago, to watch a Missouri scrimmage there, didn't strike me as, you know, the kind of place that's going to have College game day anytime.
Harlan C. Hunter Stadium, in seating capacity 7,450. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, okay? But if you be forewarned, if Lindenwood pulls off the upset over Kansas, this is one of the great upsets of all time. No one on earth could see this coming other than some visionary at Lindenwood.
That'll the be a gumption. Pod topic on the overreaction show next week.
Just the sheer gumption. Hey, let's make, like, this is where, this is like, let's, are you guys any good at football? Let's go. We're going D1. You guys any good? No.
No, yeah, right.
I mean, it's like, you go North Dakota State, and you guys want to bump App State, right? Appalachian State. Hey, we're, you know, we're in a, we got students, we got this, we got that. Just beat Michigan. Yeah, move on up. Lindenwood going for it. So keep your eye out Thursday night. Lindenwood versus Kansas at the soccer stadium.
Yeah, they did win the Heart of America Athletic Conference 3 times in 2004, 2007, and 2009.
I mean, that's so practically Tom Osborne's Tuskers, really. Probably. Many people sent me this, as they should have. Women's soccer news. UMass women's soccer team hosted Rutgers on Sunday, and there was a fight. Flat out fight. And I would like to commend Ashley Lamond from the UMass soccer team. We don't give out the, I'll give you a small sample, Heisman. When Rutgers and UMass play women's soccer, sometimes you got to throw hands. And Ashley threw some. It was a brawl in a women's soccer game.
Flat out brawl?
There was a dirty play by the Rutgers woman, Gia German. She got called for a foul, and then they were trying to set up the ball for a quick kick, and there was more pushing, and then there was a punch. There might have been some hair grab. There was a Gia did do a nice judo throw. I mean, really? I don't know if you see this video, but it was a flat out fight.
Really?
It wasn't like those men's soccer games where they're always beefing in like Euros. It's like the injuries.
Nothing happens. Yeah.
The women don't fake injuries, and if they're going to fight, they're going to fight. Let's go.
That's veteran pod listeners will know that nothing excites Dan Wetzel as much as a good fight during what's not supposed to be a fighting contest.
Were there any slap fightings? Were there any slap fights?
No slap fight. It's closed fists. Let's go.
Oh, wow.
Knucks down, baby.
Well, I know how much you love slap fighting.
I do love slap fighting, but this was a good fight, and I commend Ashley standing up for UMass, and UMass won the game 1-0. Take that, scoreboard, Rutgers. Go back to New Jersey. You got beat on the scoreboard. You got beat in the field fight. What are we doing? Don't mess with it. Don't come into Amherst and expect a nice treatment. This is women's soccer.
Again, the only area in which Dan Wetzel has school pride.
This young lady.
Can our women's soccer team beat up your women's soccer team?
This young lady epitomizes what the University of Massachusetts should be about. Not taking crap from people from New Jersey. I think we can all agree on that.
Are we getting an unbiased view of the play here? You said it was a dirty play by Rutgers.
Absolutely.
Do we know that?
Absolutely. Okay. I think it should be written in Latin somewhere on the campus. Don't take stuff from S. Veritas, New Jersey. Anyway, people are sending me the thing. You might be surprised to hear.
Yeah, shocked.
UMass women's soccer brawl. All of a sudden, it's just like my whole timeline. Hey, what are you guys watching? Where are you guys watching this? Who was tuned in?
Yeah,
I don't have school pride currently. I was not watching the game. I did not. I can't say I did, but I just want to. Sometimes young people come along. They need to be commended for their actions.
And, UMass women's soccer might get like Ashley a $20 alumni donation out of this.
You know what? This might, if they get fined or something, I may jump in. I might. Might not, because I'll find something else to spend the money on. But I might. I'm not ruling it out. I've never been more prideful. All right, quick people's court here. This is involves a apartment in Manhattan. This woman had a she had three parrots in her apartment. Three parrots. It's a true story. It's the New York Times.
I did. Actually,
I need
this.
The Daily Mail version of this. New York Times writes it too like it's too like flowy.
You need your sensationalism.
Yeah, let's get right to it. Exactly. For almost 20 years, a group of parrots and their owner lived at the Rutherford, a co-op apartment in the ritzy Gramercy Park neighborhood of Manhattan. For almost as many years, the neighbors complained the parrots shrieked, squawked. They shouted human words, but not clearly enough to follow the conversations. The parrots seemed to drive everyone mad. After years of complaints, the chorus of caws and cries became unbearable. The co-op board moved to evict the woman who cared for the animals. The birds were named Ginger, Layla, and Curtis, and they were deemed, Pat, emotional support parrots.
Well, that's a deciding factor here.
Now there is a lawsuit. The woman, Ms. Lesser, is suing for $165,000 in damages and claiming that they will have to buy her apartment for $585,000. And they believe that she was discriminated against and then retaliated against because of the parrots, because she had emotional issues and she needed her support parrots who just happened to make a racket. I'm pretty sure I know where Justice 40 is going to come down on this one.
Yeah. Get her out. Get her birds out. No way. You're going to make everybody miserable listening to your squawking birds. And they're not even articulating well enough so you can eavesdrop and hear what they're saying. She is losing on all counts here. Nobody needs an emotional support parrot, much less three of them. Three, very excessive. I mean, even two is excessive. Three is ridiculous. You don't get three emotional support parrots. Put her on the streets, man. She's out.
This went on for 20 years?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And they're just now doing this?
Well, I mean, it's been a long and windy process. It just made the New York Times. They've probably been scrapping for years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Seems she like filed a fair housing complaint with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development in 2018.
Oh, geez.
Come on, man.
Wow. Yeah, they should have thrown her and her parrots out 19 years ago, probably.
Yep.
Agree with Justice 40.
This is terrible. Can you imagine you move into your new apartment in New York?
20 years.
Three parrots are arguing next door and they're not even finishing.
Oh, man. No, total there should nightmare. Be a zoning law or something that you can't have parrots in an apartment, just like houses where you're separated from your neighbors, at least.
Yeah. And you know, these things are small. $585,000. This is not a big apartment.
No. That's where, like, the disconnect with that and calling it a ritzy neighborhood.
They do have these buildings that are, like, rent control. I don't know. But this is absolutely insane. This person, the New York Times tried to really ran this like an even Steven story. Like, it's well done and well reported, but the emotional support parrots versus the co-op board. I say 99%, even PETA would be on the side of the co-op board.
Yeah. Nobody wants to hear parrots shrieking for 20 years. Not even 20 hours.
This is a lawless society. Hit it. Oh my God. Anyway,
I think she was tolerated far too long.
Yeah. Well, the emotional support parrots, they're coming to a plane near you, Pat. Boy, I would be so excited if that actually happened. Imagine Pat on a long flight with three parrots, Ginger, Layla, and Curtis.
Curtis
would be great.
Who names a parrot Curtis?
That's this another another strike against.
So
this
many
woman.
Problems here. All right, this show is all over the place, but we're getting focused. Season's coming. We'll be back this week with more. Obviously we're excited for all the week one action, which we will do. Race for the Case returns, so you can lose money with us. Actually, we all finished above 500 last time.
That's right.
It was a good race. And we'll do a whole bunch more. Everyone enjoy the build up, the exciting build up to week one. And we will talk to you.